I think I'd better open up with a letter that they sent me that got this show on the road. It says, Dear Mr. Bell, thank you for helping to bring this story to the public. As Jonathan Reed promised to you, here are the negatives of the obelisk and the alien being. You may have them analyzed to prove once and for all that they are only ordinary 35-millimeter color negatives and that, in fact, they have not been altered in any way and have not been digitally enhanced or edited and are not computer-generated. In fact, I have those negatives here. I'll hold them up for you, and I have had them looked at. And there appears to be nothing tampered with. It goes on, through this analysis, it will conclusively prove that the photographs and negatives of the obelisk were not processed, not manufactured, nor manipulated in any kind of shadow box illusion or trick, as was previously claimed on the Art Bell Show. Now, proving that the photographic evidence of the obelisk craft is a full-size, three-dimensional object that was, in fact, simply captured on film in the woods by Dr. Jonathan Reed and his camera, thus again proving once and for all that they are real and genuine photos of a strange, anomalous object that was, in fact, truly there. Previous analysis conducted by Eastman Kodak in New York. Negatives enclosed, two 35-millimeter negatives in separate white envelopes. I have them marked obelisk and one marked alien. Each negative in a protective sleeve and should only be handled by professional technicians at all times. Fingerprints. Also, Jonathan has given his permission for UART to scan and post on your website the enclosed never-before-seen photographs of the alien link artifact. And I have scanned those photographs, and they are on the website right now. He adds, please post a copyright, as with the other photos. We have done so. He goes on, these photos illustrate its unique, unusual shape, hieroglyphic symbols, fascinating construction, and the black, organic-like undersurface with its protruding gold needles. It also will illustrate size and dimension. There are three photographs, and I have scanned all three, and they are on the website right now. He goes on, a surprise guest, unparalleled exclusive on your show, Dr. Reed is willing to introduce you and your audience to Dr. Harold Chacon, C-H-A-C-O-N, a degreed microbiologist graduating with honors from Catholic University of Puerto Rico with a B.S. Master's Program Certificate in the field of microbiology, biomedical research in cell immunology, biochemistry, and zoology, currently studying and residing here in the U.S. Mr. Chacon will help from his university have analyzed and documented in detail organic tissue and blood samples taken from the alien creature that Jonathan and his friend Gary were able to hide away and preserve. Mr. Chacon's findings are ready to be released to the public and to the world on your show. Now, there's more, but let us begin by seeing if everybody is present and accounted for. Dr. Jonathan Reed, are you there?
Yes, sir.
Welcome back to the program, Doctor.
Thank you, Art. Good evening, and thanks for having us back.
Absolutely. Great to have you. We have a complete bio on you, on your educational background, the whole thing, and we'll get to that later because a lot of people want it. Robert Wraith, are you there?
Right here, Art.
Good. And, Robert, how would you describe your relationship with Dr. Reed?
We're very good friends now. Absolutely very good friends.
Been through a lot.
We have been through a lot of hell. Absolutely. One thing that I'd like to talk about later in some detail is the fact that it is not a rumor that, yes, Jonathan was shot.
No, I haven't mentioned that to the audience yet, but yes, indeed. Jonathan, since the last broadcast, right,
yes.
Robert?
This was shortly after we had left San Diego.
Shot as in shot with a bullet from a gun, that kind of shot.
He was shot with a bullet from a gun. It went through his shoulder.
All right. We'll get to that story. So we're going to, because we have guests who have to get to bed early, we've got to get through some of the early evidence that we're going to present. And so with us now is Harold Chacon. Dr. Chacon, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. I guess at some point, and you can tell me when, Dr. Reed and Robert supplied you with tissue samples and what we call blood from this alien creature that they had. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct, yeah. We communicate, and they supply me with samples.
Okay.
And I heard about them, about Dr. Reed's encounter, last time they were on your show, actually.
All right. Yeah. Well, let's back up a little bit. Could you tell us a little bit about yourself, where you studied, even though I read that, and what your qualifications are to be doing this?
Yes, I am a scientist. I study science from a university. I graduate, and I'm currently, you know, in a program for a doctoral degree in science, too, in the field of science. And but right now, that was not from the university that I graduate. That was here in the United States.
All right.
Yeah.
When did you receive the samples, Doctor?
These samples were given to me about June 1999.
In June of 99?
Yeah.
And you received exactly what, tissue and blood?
Okay, there was actually three samples, tissue samples in vials, and there was one fluid that at the beginning, we cannot say exactly what it was at that moment. But after studying, yeah, we realized that, yeah, we were working with blood.
So in other words, you heard the original broadcast, so you knew the story.
Yeah, yeah,
and
through the website, yeah.
And so then you were contacted independently by...
I contacted them.
I contacted them,
yep.
I see.
Mr. Chacon emailed us in about April and was interested in doing this, and... It was a process. I spent some time communicating with him. We talked via email for a while. I checked out his credentials. We then talked on the phone. And then finally, I met with him personally after all security measures had been met. We talked again in great detail about this case. And later, that's when Dr. Jonathan Reed and myself met him personally together.
So you met, and was it at that first meeting you gave him the samples?
No, it was later on.
Later on. All right.
I think it should also be mentioned, Art, that I think Mr. Chacon was extremely skeptical at the onset.
Well, you know, Dr. Reed, there are many skeptical of this story.
Absolutely.
You know that, of course.
And that should be the way it is.
All right. Well, then let's proceed through matters as we should. Mr. Chacon,
yes.
What can you tell us about the analysis of the I don't know if you want to call it skin or tissue samples and or what's called the blood? What have you found?
Okay. At the beginning, I received three tissue samples and one fluid that we called blood.
Okay.
They were delivered to me in a small medical transport, like a freezer type. It would look like if you tried to compare it with a small camping cooler.
Kind of like the sort of container they keep donated organs in.
Exactly.
Okay.
Where you keep blood and
That's
you
right.
keep it frozen so it preserves any type of sample.
All right.
After I remove the top of the box and I open the inner seal, the seal that keeps the cold inside, because we use actually nitrogen. Inside the box, there were samples were wrapped in linen gauze, keeping them from banging to each other because they can broke, and they can mix together, and then our problem would be bigger.
Of course.
And then the samples were analyzed. Were analyzed through a microscope, what is called a transmission microscope, and we were analyzed through the electron scanning microscope, too.
I guess I should ask Dr. Reed about how these samples were obtained. Doctor, did you draw blood, as it were? Is that how you got the sample? And with regard to the tissue, how did you get that? Did you scrape it or cut it or what?
Well, the samples were obtained, first of all, during our, what shall I say, clinical close-up analysis with Gary and I, my friend Gary.
That's the time during which those photographs were taken.
Correct.
Okay.
And the wound on the creature's head was definitely open and accessible, and there was fluid draining at the time. So we were just able to literally
scrape it up and
put it in a vial.
And the same deal, I assume, with the tissue. There would have been loose tissue.
There was some ragged edges to the wound, and I actually cut some off with my X-Acto knife.
Okay, folks, now, you can see all that, by the way, on my website in the photographs. You can actually see the wound on the alien.
I'd like to add one thing, Art, at this time.
Sure.
The last time we were on, I had not been in contact with Gary at all. In fact, I asked people if they had any information or knew how to get a hold of him to get a hold of us.
All right.
About a month after we were on your show and we had given out an email address.
That's right.
We got an email from some folks who were inquiring if they could get a hold of us to talk about, you know, whether or not the Gary we were talking about was in fact my friend. This was done very, very carefully. These people were very cautious about whether or not I was actually a non-government type entity looking
sure.
for Gary.
Sure.
We made arrangements, and I sent someone to verify, in fact, that this was my friend, Gary, because at the time, I was very skeptical of everybody.
You can imagine why, too, after all he's been through.
Yeah, of course I can. Of course I can. All right.
It was quite a process with these individuals because they were concerned about Gary's safety. And who is this Dr. Reed? Is this really Dr. Reed? Is he really his friend? So it was quite a communication time.
I understand.
We made the contact. It was Gary. We did verify this. I made arrangements to go to him, which was a great distance away, and in fact reunited with my old friend. Now, there are many people who have said, well, you sent samples to a university to have studied, and then I lost those samples because I went back to find them, and there was no sign that they had ever been there.
Right.
But Gary and I, during our 9-day ordeal, took a lot of the evidence I had and split it up into groups and sent it in different directions.
Good for you.
One of the samples that we had sent, Gary mailed unknowingly to me to these people. They took it, did what they have to, and preserved it.
Mm-hmm.
The samples that were tested is what Gary had sent away. Otherwise, we wouldn't have anything.
I understand. All right. Dr. Chacon, again, you got the samples. You began the testing. What did you find?
Okay. From the samples, when we tried to do the first one, after unfreezing them, they came in this closing packaging. We have to freeze them. First sample, number one, apparently was skin tissue. Very actually skin tissue,
right.
And muscle tissue that was connected together naturally by means of growth. Like would be normally in a human being that you have cutaneous and subcutaneous tissue, and they all grow in a pattern, and they grow attached together.
Yes.
The first, when I saw the samples, they were really, really small. They were actually like, to give you a close relationship, would be one-fifth of a small pencil eraser. They were really, really small.
Small, yes, okay.
But enough to test them.
Okay.
The first one, what we consider the skin tissue that was viewed under the microscope, resemble what is called the superficial fascia or top surface of the skin layer. These reveal an extremely dense, leathery surface structure of cells set closely, very closely together in some uniform patterns of growth with about the same elasticity of human skin, I would say.
Same elasticity?
Same elasticity.
Was it in fact human skin?
No.
No.
No, it's got some differences.
All right. When we get back, we will explore those differences. Everybody hold on. You're going to have to be listening very carefully tonight because we're going to be presenting a great deal of information that you're going to want to assimilate and check out. Remember, this is something you can either believe and embrace as the facts unfold before you, or dismiss. That's up to you. It all comes from the same place, Coast to Coast AM. Stay right where you are. My guest, Dr. Jonathan Reed, Robert Wraith, and Dr. Harold Chacon, a microbiologist. And once again, so that you know, reading from what was sent to me, Dr. Chacon is a degreed microbiologist, graduating with honors from Catholic University of Puerto Rico with a B.S. Master's Program Certificate in the field of microbiology, biomedical research in cell immunology, biochemistry, and zoology, currently studying and residing here in the U.S. And I'm not going to run my commercial break now. We're going to go directly back to our guests. And, Doctor, if you would continue, please, the tissue sample you said was not, had similarities to, but was in fact not human.
Not human. Okay. It was about 3 millimeters in thickness, very, very fibrous consistency, and the surface was kind of light grayish brown.
Really?
Extremely transparent. Much more transparent than human skin. Much more.
Okay.
There was no signs of any hair or hair follicles within the surface of the cell structure.
Right.
Absolutely no signs of it. We found some subcutaneous tissue, that's the one that is under the surface, and that one has some sebaceous-like glands. Those are the glands that produce usually fat. But half as many as we found in a human skin.
Half as many.
Half as many.
All right. Are any of these findings consistent with any other living mammals on Earth that you know? No?
No. Probably the one that could be most related, probably, in some ways, not completely, could be the reptile.
Reptilian.
But not completely.
But enough difference so it definitely was not earthly reptilian.
No, it's not an earthly reptile.
So you're telling me this is tissue from a creature from other than Earth?
From, I don't know, because this is a tissue sample from nothing that we have any data collected on Earth.
All right. You also received a blood sample, or what we are calling blood.
What we used to call, exactly, blood. Besides that one, besides that skin tissue sample, we have another muscle sample, too.
A muscle sample?
So it was, attached to it. The muscle, it's connected to this layer of skin, which resembles, this muscle resembles what is called the occipital frontalis muscle in human skull tissue. It resembles, but it was kind of yellowish pink in color. In humans, it's usually red. This one didn't have that red color. In closer examination, there was another smaller, fine muscle that was intersecting this occipital muscle, resembling what is called the temporal fascia muscle in the humans. The two are connected, and it was connected by tendinous and fatty fibrous tissue. That was similar to humans. That is very similar to humans.
Very similar to humans. So similar, it would be human?
Well, not necessarily, no. No, because the samples got some situations that probably resemble human skin.
I understand.
In some arrangements, but not completely.
Well, I just want to be very clear for the audience that what we are describing here, the tissue, even the muscle sample, is close to in some respects, but different enough to be called absolutely non-human.
Oh, yeah, completely. Yeah.
Completely, all right.
Non-human.
All right, now, on to the blood, or what we call the blood.
Okay, and there's a sample that we call, at that time, we call it the blood. This was really, really, really interesting. The sample was dried. When you put it to the freezing, you put it into contact with really low temperatures. Usually liquid tissue, because blood is considered a liquid tissue.
Right.
They get really dry, and we have to rehydrate that tissue again. We rehydrate the tissue with saline solution, and at that time we're going to be able to study the cells, and is there a difference? The general findings, when we tested it, reveal a level of oxygen and carbon dioxide and nitrogen-based gases, but with a slight difference. In this case, there was a high copper sulfate traces.
Copper sulfate?
Yeah, copper sulfate, really, really high traces of that.
Copper sulfate?
Fine, yeah. The copper sulfate traces, there were white and red-black corpuscles, what they're called corpuscles, with the elongated nucleus.
God, I want to stop you for just a second and remind my audience that in a recent significant interview we did on animal mutilations, they found missing from the cows what? Copper. The copper content, I think in the liver, if I'm remembering correctly, mm-hmm. was almost entirely missing. And it just keyed when you said that to me. Fascinating. So, anyway, continue, please.
Okay. When we keep sampling and testing it, we look for chromosomes, because we're actually working with red blood cells.
Yes.
And we're looking for more specific proofs and findings. And when we did the chromosome study, it revealed that the red blood cells, or what we could be resembling red blood cells, they have a chromosome count of 46, exactly as humans.
Okay.
This is very human. We have 46 chromosomes too. But what is really, really, really astonishing is that 9 of those 46 chromosomes are not human.
9 are not human?
9 are not human, but they're only found in dolphins and some aquatic sea tortoises.
Dolphin? But these 9 chromosomes are found in dolphins and some aquatic sea tortoises?
Yes, yes, yes. This is the only data that we have that resemble this type of chromosome that we found in these blood cells.
Is there any way that you can imagine that any creature that we know of could carry such a chromosome structure?
No, that is unique. We check catalogs in many, many universities, and we went through a lot of data and trying to find some relationships between these scientific findings with any animal that we know, that science actually knows in our planet, and we couldn't find any way to fit it. That was impossible to fit for us.
Those are astounding findings.
That is really impressive.
Have you shared these with colleagues?
Yeah. It was really impressive. They dropped from their seats, actually. We did, in the sampling, we used what is called gel electrophoresis. And it's a technique that we use for sampling genetical material and chromosomes. They have the genetical material. And at this time, the only thing that we could find that it was closely resembling those 9 chromosomes were dolphins only. Dolphins.
Doctor, I'm just a layman, so I'm going to ask a layman-like question. On behalf of the audience, as you well know, people can tamper with photographs on computers and fake them.
Yes.
Is there any way that you can see that anybody easily could have tampered with something at the molecular chromosome level to have produced this as a hoax?
Okay. In terms of the technology that humanity has right now.
Yes.
We can deal with genes. Yeah, we can open DNA strands. But as you know, even the human genome is not completely set right now. So we don't even know our own DNA system completely. We cannot say actually how many genes we have working for certain situations in our body. So it's very difficult right now to tamper something like this. It would be very difficult to add a chromosome to a cell and keep it alive. And especially a chromosome, because you have to link them all together. Chromosomes, they react to specific metabolic reactions in the body. So for right now, I would say that for humanity, it's impossible.
All right.
There's no way.
Then that must mean that, in your opinion, you examined tissue and muscle and blood, what we're calling blood,
yeah,
of a being not human and not not of any mammal construction.
Human or any mammal that we have seen or we have ever cataloged in science.
Art, ask him about the other tissue sample.
You ask him.
More, not just.
No, you go ahead. You ask him. What other?
Chacon.
Okay. Yeah.
Talk about the cranial tissue.
Yeah, that is very interesting too. This is the other findings that I'm going. In the samples that Dr. Reyes gave me, there was apparently he put the samples from 1 to 4, but in fact there were 5. One of the vials actually contained 2 tissue samples stuck together due to their growth relationship. It's normally that they grow together. So when Dr. Reyes took this sample, thinking that it's just a single thing, he took 2, actually. That second sample consists of what it would be brain matter. In this case, that would be the third sample. It resembles what is called the dura and the pia matter of the human brain. It resembles them. This tissue is a very fine vascular membrane which cushions the brain against the skull. It would be like the folding. It would be like a bag that the brain is actually floating inside this bag. And it protects it against the direct contact with the skull bone. This lining, we should call, extends over the entire surface of the gray matter of the brain. So this is covering the whole brain. In this case, was a dense, unelastic, and fibrous material lining the skull inside. Below this tissue, we found what is called the subarachnoid space tissue, and it's like a spongy or a jelly-like tissue, consisting of a delicate connective fibrous material meshing. Within humans, it's called the subarachnoid fluid. We found this to be a similar material, but unlike in humans, it contains really, really large nerve endings and oval or sometimes round surfaces. These nerves are totally different and foreign to anything we even closely relating to the human nerve tissue and our anatomy. This is completely different. The arrangement is completely different of the nerves. Another really interesting finding is that under close examination, this tissue area did not at all resemble human tissue. In more closely study, the cranial membrane resembles probably the one of a reptilian type animal because it have a much different structural anatomy.
All right, Doctor, we're very short on time. You've given us a very great deal of information. Is there anything else critical to get out before we move on?
Yes, it's something really, really interesting. We found some new structures inside the brain.
New structures
inside this. The only part of the brain. You know that the brain's got certain convolutions when you look at a brain.
Sure.
The only part that we have from this sample was what it would be considered the external or the molecular layer. Okay, the fascinating and unique differences found in this sample was the discovery of some angular and tubular straw-like open membranes, like little connecting tubes, that they are completely wrapped in nerves and connecting fibers. These little tubes are protruding up and through the base of the molecular layer, so they're coming out of this layer in the brain. The brain cells. They're randomly looping over the top of the cortex, only to descend back into this the surface, what will be the convolution versus the surface, and they're embedding directly into the cells of the body of Purkinje. The Purkinje cells are the ones that are related to the electrical capacity in the human brain, and they work as an isolation material. These cells are actually attached to the axon of the dendrite. These are nerve cells. But in this case, there was a different structure that we don't know. We haven't seen, never seen this connection before. This is truly a new discovery.
Doctor, I don't know how to thank you for delivering all of this astounding information to us. I I really appreciate your report. We're woefully short on time. We have so much we have to get to tonight. But, Doctor, thank you. And I would love to see a written summary of your findings, as I'm sure the audience would
as
well.
Yes, there's going to be information to be publicized shortly.
All right, Doctor. I'm going to say thank you and good night to you.
Thank you very much, sir.
And as for the other two of you, Dr. Reed.
Yes.
And Robert, hold on a moment. Let me take care of what I've got to do here. Holy moly. I got more than I bargained for there. All right, back now to my guests, Dr. Jonathan Reed and Robert Wraith. And Dr. Reed, your house was ransacked in Seattle, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
That is part of your story that a lot of people had some doubts about. And so when we come back from the break, we're going to try to get on your old landlord, a man named Larry Arthur, in the Seattle area, who is prepared, apparently, to act as your witness for what occurred. Is that correct?
Yes, finally.
Any idea why your house was ransacked, Doctor?
They were looking for the evidence.
The alien body, the artifacts?
Yes.
Whatever.
Everything.
All right. Dr. Reed and Robert Wraith, hold on. Everybody, we have photographs to substantiate everything we're talking about on my website right now. Photographs of the alien. Photographs of the alien artifact. Photographs of the obelisk. If you haven't heard the story, before this night is over, you will hear it. In the meantime, the photographs are on my website. Go see for yourself. It's all at www.artbell.com. That's www.artbell.com. Well, all right, back now to my guests. Gentlemen, welcome back, Dr. Reed, Robert Wraith. And we are now joined by Larry Arthur. But first, Dr. Reed, when exactly in the chronology of events in the story was your house ransacked?
The ninth day from day one when I brought the creature home. I basically had been driving back to my house in the evening and realized that there were three large step vans parked in front of my house and people going in and out them with hand trucks, with men dressed in, like, moving attire, like similar to a jumpsuit.
Right.
And I kept going. And then later came back early in the morning to my house being just completely torn apart. It was just as if a cyclone had gone through there.
Okay, this was in the Seattle area where you lived?
Yes.
All right. Okay, a lot of people found that hard to believe, a kind of a Men in Black type story, coming to, you know, take away all the evidence. But we now know that some of it at least was saved, thanks to the doctor in the last hour. We now have on the line Larry Arthur. Larry, how do you know Dr. Reed?
Well, we met about 12 years ago through a mutual acquaintance and had a common interest at the time, happened to be music, and, you know, just developed a friendship and a relationship, and I've been a landlord for about 15 years. And
what do you have, apartments, condos, what?
No, just single family.
Oh, single homes.
Yes.
All right. When did you hear from the doctor, and how did you learn that something had happened to his house? How did that happen?
Well, he called me and asked if we could meet at the house, and we made arrangements to do that. I went over there.
You had been his landlord for how long?
Oh, about 5 years.
5 years, all right. So he called you up and probably said, God, you've got to get over here and see this. Something awful's happened or something like that?
Well, he didn't provide too many details over the phone, but he didn't sound like his usual self. And I must admit, in the 15 years that I've been a landlord, this was certainly the most bizarre thing I've ever come across.
All right, so over you went, and what did you find?
Well, I don't know how to describe it. It certainly wasn't vandalism, but it looked to me like somebody was looking for something. I do a lot of remodeling. And in fact, after the fact, after this happened, I had been considering selling the house. This clinched that decision for me. It took me a couple of months working, you know, in my spare time, but I put quite a few hours in the house getting it ready for sale and cleaning up.
Well, how would you describe the condition of the house? I mean, were drawers torn open and emptied? Were things smashed? Or was it a search that had gone on, in your opinion? Or, you know, what was the condition?
Well, it was a mess inside. What was unusual to me was the house had attic access and it had a crawl space,
right.
Yet somebody had cut an access right through the floor. They had also cut an access through the ceiling in a couple of spots.
Really?
Everything that had been hanging on the walls was gone, was off the walls.
And on the floor or just gone?
Some things, there was kind of a central pile where things had been kind of piled in one spot. There were some things missing. All of the outlet, the electrical outlet covers,
yes,
were off.
What?
Yeah, all of the telephone outlet covers were off. The face to the electrical panel was off. The toilet had been lifted off of the wax ring and was sitting alongside the toilet. It was weird.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
Huh. You, as a landlord, you probably went, good Lord, doctor, what have you done?
Well, I was kind of dumbfounded, really.
No. Dr. Reed obviously was there. And how did he explain this to you? Did he say, I came home and I found this?
Well, I know Jonathan to be probably one of the most steady and dependable people I've ever known. And he was pretty shook. And he had explained to me that something had happened recently on one of his weekend outings in the woods that his dog, Susie, had been killed by something in the woods.
So he told you some of the whole story.
Well, he was really reluctant to provide much detail at that time. He
I understand.
Had some concern that, you know, he might be in some trouble, and he was kind of panicked, really.
Okay, was he moving at that time? Did he want to get out of there, or where did it go from there? I mean,
well, I had been considering selling the house, and this was kind of the capper, you know, for that. I, you know, at that point, I fixed the house up, put it on the market, and sold it.
And at that point then, Dr. Reed, I take it you moved. You got the hell out of there.
Well, first of all, there was nothing left of mine in the house except things that were torn apart. Like the sofa had been just completely shredded, like somebody had been looking through the inside of it.
You saw that, Larry?
I saw that, and what was interesting in the months that I was working on, in the time that I was working on the house after this event, there were some other small details. Number one, there wasn't much trace. You know, when you look around for, you know, like boot markings, footprints, what have you.
Right.
What was interesting in the couple of days following when I was out in the yard, and this was really weird, different spots of the yard had what I would describe as what looked like quarter-inch holes. And it looked to me like somebody had actually taken a rod or something and had probed parts of the yard.
Holy smokes.
Yeah, really.
Now, what were you saying to Dr. Reed during all of this? You must have been saying, did you do this? Do you know who did it? How did this happen?
I don't know if we can say that on the radio.
Okay, don't then, please.
Well,
I get the idea.
The first thing that came to my mind was to call the police.
Right. And, doctor, what'd you say?
Well, I said that's his option, but I'm not going to be there.
In other words, you were scared.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, there was
nothing of mine left worth even packing up. Everything that I had was gone. I mean, I had two fire filing cabinets that are, you know, 5 feet tall.
Right.
That weigh about 800 pounds apiece.
Right.
That were gone. They were just gone. Things that I hadn't even unpacked for years. You know, you collect things, like boxes of books that you had in school.
Right.
They were gone. Everything was gone.
They cleaned that house out.
Cleaned it out. Anything else you want to add, Larry?
Not really. We had, you know, talked about calling the police and basically came to an agreement. And Jonathan was, you know, fair with me. I figured out what it looked like my costs were involved, and he covered that.
And he covered it.
Yeah.
But you are definitely witness to everything he just talked about.
Absolutely.
The ransacking, the cutting of the sofa, the removing of all the plates and all the rest of it. A real clean job.
Well, I'm a very conservative individual, and if I had not experienced something like this, I wouldn't have believed it.
Larry, remember the garage door?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
What about the garage door?
Well, I had a fairly heavy duty. The garage door had some access to the inner yard. There was a typical garage door that you would drive a car through on the outside.
Everybody should remember this is where the freezer was, where the alien being was kept, in the garage. So go ahead.
Towards the inside of the yard, there was an access door. And it was a steel door, you know, not commercial steel, but like a Stanley metal door.
Right.
It had a very heavy-duty deadbolt on it, and it appeared that that had given them some trouble, whoever these people were getting
yes.
it open.
Yes.
So they removed the entire door frame. The door frame was literally, door frame and the door was pried out.
Holy smokes.
Literally torn out of the side of the garage.
What kind of force would it have taken to do that?
Well, I'd say that it definitely took more than one person to do it. And basically, I would say a couple of people with some pry bars. And pry bars, tools, you know, to get them to pound the pry bars in past the door framing and to lever it out.
Doctor, why would that have been necessary? Can you imagine why?
Well, the only thing I can think of is they wanted access in there big time. And I think by that time, they knew that I had something in my garage.
Mm-hmm. In your freezer.
That was a little bit more of a secluded part of the house, too.
Once I went through the house, of course, the freezer was totally gone from the garage.
So they took the whole damn freezer.
Right. We're talking a coffin-type freezer.
Yeah, I remember that.
You know.
Yep. One of those big, long...
Right. And it wouldn't have fit through the door into the yard unless they took that out.
I'm
not sure if that's why they did it.
I've got you. All right.
If you recall, too, Art, when Jonathan was going down his street in his neighborhood, his previous neighborhood, he saw these individuals busy at work, and he just got out of there.
Yes, I do recall. And for those of you that have not heard the story, and I know there are some, we're working it backwards tonight to get these witnesses on the air. So, Larry Arthur, I want to thank you for being with us.
You're welcome.
All right.
Thank you, Larry.
Right. Yes, thank you very, very much, Larry. It takes some guts, you know, to come forward in a situation like this. I'm going to try and call, if I'm able, and this may be quite a trick, our last witness, who is, I'm going to do that as I'm speaking to you, and it's the only way I can do it, and then we're going to get to the whole story for those of you who may not have heard it. So let's see if we can get our last witness on the phone here.
Hello.
Hello there. Is this Sean?
Sean Alante.
Right. You are a member of MUFON, which is a mutual UFO network, right?
That's correct. I'm also a MUFON field investigator and a certified hypnotherapist who regresses people that have abduction experiences or contact experiences.
All right. Can you explain your contact with Dr. Reed and how it progressed and what you know of this whole story?
Okay, I can start at the beginning if you'd like.
I would. MUFON is certainly a very well-respected organization, so you'll be adding quite a bit here. Go right ahead.
Okay, well, it started on October 19th, actually, when Rob, who is the director of San Diego UFO Society, came over to my house and mentioned that he knew somebody or knew of this story, that somebody had some alien photos and alien video, you know, photos of an alien and a craft, okay?
Right.
So a couple days later, I meet the lady who knows Robert Wraith, okay? They used to be neighbors. She moved to San Diego. He moved to Washington. Her name is Chris. As the process goes on, she goes up to Washington State about November 1st.
Sean, you're in San Diego, right?
I'm in San Diego.
All right.
About November 1st, meets Jonathan, sees the video, okay, of the alien and the craft and other photos, comes back and is very impressed, okay, very convinced then. About that time, they did not know what direction to go either in the beginning, okay? There was I don't want to call it confusing, but, you know, indecision. Then they decided to go on your show, and this is when you got the material, okay, in the mail, and you
That's
got
right.
the facts.
That's
okay?
right.
And I think it was November 11th is when they went on.
Sounds about right.
Okay. So then they were on, I think it was about a week later. Okay. So in the process, Chris becomes more involved. After those two shows, she wanted to go and contact people in the movie industry. And I actually was in the house once, Rob's house, when Dick Clark Productions called, okay?
Right.
I was interested in contacting somebody, okay?
Right.
Because San Diego UFO Society became the contact point. You know that. It was on at the end of the
yes.
show. You
yes.
would give that contact.
That's correct.
So, consequently, Chris received also a copy of the video of the alien, okay, which I got to see November 25th.
The public,
Thanksgiving. November
excuse me. The public has not seen this video yet.
No.
They've seen the still photographs I've got on the website right now, but not the video. I've seen the video.
Yeah.
You've seen the video.
Yeah.
And
about 110 people saw it in San Diego, March 14th, and it is very impressive and very impactful. And I think to really judge this whole story, someone really needs to see that, okay, and meet Jonathan to really
Well, can you give people your impression of that video? In other words, what did you see? What did you hear?
Okay. Well, in the forest, you know, as he described, there's interference, okay? There's definite interference going on. It's jumping around in a sense. One very impressive thing, though, is that you do see the alien laying on the space blanket, and it's a bluish-gray color, at least from a distance. I guess it could be bluish-pink close-up, okay?
All right.
Now, so we have two different colors of the alien here, and it changed, you know, obviously when it was in the freezer to a brownish color. Then you also see the obelisk from a distance, and it's jumping around also. Okay, so there's a lot of interference, and you do hear Jonathan breathing heavy, hyperventilating, and you do also hear him get sick. Okay?
That's right.
So, and when you switch to the garage, then I saw the examination. So you see the alien laying on the floor, and he you see him open the mouth, and he moves the neck.
That's right.
And a lot of it's there now on the website, but there's one thing you can't really see really clearly in the photos that I thought was impressive.
What was that?
And that is, through the skin, you can see the sections of the skull or the plates of the skull. And our skull was made up of sections, too.
All right, Hold it right there, Ed. Robert Wraith, and with us now, Sean Alante. Sean, pronounce your last name for me again, please.
Atlante.
I'm sorry, A-T-L-A-N-T-I,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And you've been in MUFON for how long?
Oh, about 11 years.
11 years in MUFON. All right. So you've been interfaced with all of this evidence, a lot of
yeah.
which the public has not seen, specifically the videotape.
That's correct.
And your assessment of it?
Well, it's very impressive. Yeah, it's very impressive. I think it's real, and I think his whole story is real. And like I said, after I finally met Jonathan, March 14th, and Mike 13th, actually, I really decided fully that I believed his story, totally.
And have you brought it to other MUFON members?
Well, there were some MUFON members in the audience. The local section director was there, and I think the other section director was there also, and there were a number of MUFON members in the audience. I did call Walt Andrus today, though. Okay.
Oh, Walt Andrus, really?
Yes, and told him I was going to be on the program.
Kind of the founding father of MUFON.
Right, and he said that he did not endorse the story at this point in time.
Has he seen the evidence?
No, he hasn't. And that's the problem. A lot of people haven't seen the evidence, the video.
I know.
And everything. And now you're having a lot of this analyzed, the photos and everything. And like I said, I saw the photos of the obelisk also. I saw side angles and close-ups to that it's not a prop or anything.
No.
No. Or there's not a string hanging down and
no.
all the rest of those.
No,
it's
none of
that. It's clearly a three-dimensional object.
Clearly. And the negatives are valid. Now, I suppose people will say, well, maybe, okay, fine, you've got the negatives, so they are real pictures, but maybe it was a prop, sort of like a movie prop or something.
You know, but I do know that Chris went up and talked to Fox Network and Dick Clark Productions and Bob Kiviat, and Jonathan had an offer, and he turned it down, an offer of quite a bit of money.
You did that, Jonathan?
Yes, I did.
Why?
Well, The proposition that was presented to us was to basically let this tape be put into another program similar to the one that Bob Kiviat had produced. And I did not want the sanctity and the quality of this to be cut up.
Compromised.
And if that was going to be the case, then I wouldn't sell it. I would produce it myself and let the public see it.
Decide for themselves in its true form.
There was an offer from a gentleman in Japan.
Who is this?
This is Robert Rafe.
Okay, Robert.
And offering $1.5 million for the video, the private collector, and Jonathan flatly refused. Because this is information art that belongs to the world. And as a matter of fact, we were invited to speak at the International UFO Congress in Laughlin, Nevada in March.
Yes.
And we will be showing the videos there.
No kidding.
But we are not going to sell the videos. People say, well, this could be about money. Well, if it's about money, my friend, there were a lot of offers for this video for an awful lot of money.
And I haven't made a dime for 3 years.
Absolutely nothing. And Jonathan refused to whore this out to anyone for any reason. He wants the people to experience this truly and fully and to understand the dynamic, important level of this information.
I agree.
This is incredibly important information. Art, we are not alone in the universe. We are not alone. And Jonathan's information and what he's been through is absolutely proof of that. You have individuals like Richard C. Hoagland, who is a great and wonderful individual. You have Whitley Strieber. With all these other people, we know we are not alone, that there are aliens, there are creatures. The tests that Mr. Chacon did independently proved conclusively that there is another creature unlike anything science has ever witnessed, ever viewed, ever seen, ever cataloged.
I admit it's strong evidence. Anything else that you would like to add?
I could add a couple more things.
Sure.
I do know that Jonathan goes through his periods of paranoia, you know.
I know.
Or what we'd call paranoia.
Well, some paranoia is justified. And
right.
With what he's been through.
And he mentioned, you know, when he got to the lecture hall and he says, well, I hope I don't get shot. And I says, you're not going to get shot in front of, you know, all these witnesses, or, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I assured him. And, you know, just so people out there think this isn't a big act, you know, when he was on the lecture stand, you know, he was nervous and stressed, and you could see that, you know. Although everything came off fine. And, you know, afterwards, you know, he says, man, is my stomach going, you know, wow. You know, like, those are all like, but those are emotional reactions that are important, though, okay, to me as a researcher.
I understand. And these reactions were pretty much shared by the other MUFON members that saw it?
Well, they were pretty impressed, okay. I mean, relatively, but I haven't been in touch. I'm in touch with one of them. I didn't get a chance to talk to him today. But they're a little more into the hard evidence and analyzation, and that's been a little of the problem, is that I think a lot of these type of people wanted to see the video analyzed, the photos analyzed, and the results, okay?
Of course, we're getting down to that now.
And we're getting down to that now. But I know Jonathan is very much into people he can trust, and I know he likes and he can trust you, and that's probably the direction he wants to go. And he doesn't want to go in a direction with people that he can't trust. And he will wait until he finds someone he can trust. I know that much about him.
So do I.
Okay.
Sean, I want to thank you for coming on. And you were the contact for a long time and remain the contact, I guess, in San Diego, MUFON contact.
Yeah, along with Rob, who's the director of San Diego UFO Society also.
Okay, Sean, thank you so much.
Thank you very much for having me on.
And good night.
Thank you, Sean.
All right. Now, I want to move on. And I want to read about Dr. Jonathan Reed. Doctor, I want to read a little bit about your background, if that's all right with you.
Fine.
All right, hold on here. I'm doing a lot of pretty interesting work here. So let me try this and then this. And you see, that's how it works. I just lost one of them. Dr. Reed, are you there?
Yes.
Okay, sorry, we got disconnected. And let us now be sure Robert is still there. Robert?
Yes, I'm still here.
All right. I want to read something. I want you to both listen to it. And, Dr. Reed, I want you to confirm it for me, all right?
Yes.
All right, here we go. The bio of Dr. Jonathan Reed. A lot of people have been wanting this. 1974 through 1976, with a grade point average of 3.0, Dr. Reed was at San Diego State University, San Diego, California, got a BA there, a teacher education certificate program. He had a single major in teaching in the areas of science and physical education at the high school level, grades 10, 11, and 12. And I should backtrack, he was born in 1956 in Orange County, California. In 1976 through 1980, he was at the University of California at Los Angeles, UCLA, PhD program in psychology, special education, study in neurotransmitters in human disorders of motor and cognitive function, controlled through clinical modern drug therapies, sensory neural, a clinical study at Fernald Child Center. That was, in fact, his doctoral dissertation. Again, with a grade point average of 3.8. In 1979, he was at Johns Hopkins University, Baltimore, Maryland, Children's Center under Dr. Frank Oski, that's OSKI, MD, working with National Research Award Program, National Institutes of Health, and the Study Grant Program. His employment study, study, 1983 through 1996 was as follows. The University of Washington, Seattle, University U of W Medical Center, Psychology Department, Clinical Research at Neuroimaging Cognitive Factor in Learning Disorders, Adolescent and Child Development Studies, Private Applied Grant Study Program. Research in special education, development psychology, and child development. His degree is a PhD in psychology, education, developmental, behavioral psychology. His interests include hiking, sailing, travel, music, sports cars, cooking, photography, community politics, and life. He was a member of the National Mental Health Association and the National Psychological Association. Dr. Reed, does that adequately, properly describe your background?
Yes, the 1979 program at Johns Hopkins was a summer program only.
All right, very good.
But yes, it's accurate.
Essentially, otherwise, that is accurate.
Yes.
All right, people have been clamoring for that information. What I think that we need to do now is to back up, because obviously some in the audience have not heard this story. Others in the audience would no doubt like to hear it from your lips again, Doctor. So if we can do it, let's do an abbreviated a form of the of what happened to you.
Well, we'll do a quickie.
All right.
October 15th, 1996, I went for a day hike in the Cascade Mountain Range in Washington State, about 60 miles east of Seattle and about 15 miles northeast of Snoqualmie Pass. That's in the Wilderness Lakes area, to be more specific. But it was a beautiful October day. I took my dog, Susie, which was a golden retriever, 7-year-old golden retriever, and we went out for a hike, for a run. And we had done this many times before, but this was especially a beautiful day. It was still warm. Some of the trees and the leaves were starting to change in color, and it was a beautiful day. I had a small day pack with me with, a little bit of food, a little dog food, some safety supplies, but a camera, my camcorder, because occasionally we'd see some wildlife. And we'd seen some deer earlier. And we just started walking. And I was probably approximately an hour and a half to 2 hours away from where I had parked my car. We had walked a great distance, probably 5 to 7 miles. And all of a sudden, my dog took off running, took off like a bolt of lightning. And occasionally, dogs will do that. They will run, and they'll chase raccoons or squirrels, and, you don't think much of that.
That's right.
But this was a little different. She took off, and she was barking, really, really barking. There was an anger to the tone. And she went up a hill in front of me, and I lost sight of her, and I could still hear the barking going on. And the barking changed from just chasing something to almost being involved or being mauled by something. And at that point, I thought it's either a cat or a bear. And so I dropped my backpack, I grabbed a branch that was alongside of the trail, and I ran to the top of the ridge where I saw my dog involved with a fight with a creature. And what I saw was a vibrating, undulating surface that looked about the size of a small child, but yet it wasn't a child. And it was vibrating so fast that I could not see a definite outline of this being. I could just barely make out the shape as if it was a vibrating shadow.
Mm-hmm.
My dog had a hold of its arm, its left arm, and was tearing at its left arm. And as I witnessed this, all of a sudden, I saw this thing, start to tear the head off of my dog, literally tearing her head, her jaws apart, ripping her skull right in half. And at that moment, that thing turned around and looked at me, stopped vibrating for a moment, and then turned back and continued to do this. And I lunged forward, took that club or branch, and swung as hard as I could, and knocked that thing about 4 or 5 feet back. Now, that's essentially happened within 10 to 20 seconds, which some say, gee, that's not very, very long. Well, it's an eternity when you're watching it.
You bet.
When your dog is literally dissolving and there is blood everywhere and then literally imploding into herself. I mean, she was like disappearing into nothing.
Imploding into herself.
As if a hole opened up beneath her neck and her skin, her fur, started to move in a circular motion as if it was going into a drain.
Kind of like, I can picture that in my mind, sort of going, as you point out, as imploding into oneself and going into a drain.
It was just an unbelievable sight. I just couldn't. My mind would not wrap around what I was looking at.
Perhaps is this a small black hole
the small event horizon opened up in the middle of your body, and you began to be sucked into yourself or into this hole.
Gotcha.
And at the same time, you know, before I ran forward and clubbed this, I yelled at my dog, thinking my dog was, you know, to let go. I screamed, you know, Susie, let go. And at the same moment, realizing that it wasn't her, it was it that was not letting go. And then witnessing this devastation. And all that happened then was emotion, was truly adrenaline. There was no thought. I just was trying to save my dog.
And so what did you do?
I jumped forward, took about two steps, and hit this thing and knocked it back about 4.5, 5 feet. And it fell dead to the ground, but letting out just a terrible sound, just a terrible, like a wail or a scream. And I think I screamed too, but I screamed because I was trying to stop this thing.
Oh, I can understand. So
that's essentially the meeting of this creature. That is the event starting. What took place after that was merely trying to recover from that moment became very difficult. I was extremely sick. Just in a second, I was violently throwing up.
Well, you bashed the creature with a stick, right?
With a club about the size of a baseball bat.
Okay, but it was a stick, actually, something you found in the woods, right?
Right, exactly.
And you caved in its skull, and you thought the creature was dead.
Yes.
Okay.
It actually split the back quarter of his skull open about 1 inch by 1.5 inch, breaking the bone and exposing the intracranial material.
And it was lying there on the ground, the raw ground at that point.
Yes.
And at that point, well, actually, at this point, we've got a break. So hold it right there, Doctor. We'll pick up this story. And remember, good morning, everybody. I've been busy. Boy, have I been busy during the break, doing something perhaps I should not have been doing. I don't know. We're going to ask permission for something. As part of the proof for what... story you're being told right now, and we're right in the middle of it. I was sent negatives. I have not only the prints, but I have negatives. Negatives of the original pictures sent of the alien and of the obelisk. And you can see those, the photographs themselves, on my website. I also, so I've got the negatives. They've been tested by Eastman Kodak in New York, I am told, by Robert Wraith. Robert, is that correct?
That is correct.
Mm-hmm. And what did Eastman say to you?
They are real. That's a real three-dimensional object you're looking at. There has been no digital tampering of any kind.
Okay, tell you what I've done, and I want to get your permission before we do it. I took the two negatives and put them side by side. I've got a good Hewlett-Packard scanner. And I scanned them, the negatives. And I increased them by 400% so they'd be bigger. But I did not tamper with color or resolution or anything. I just simply scanned negatives. I didn't even know you could do it, but I did it. And I fired them off to Keith. And I told Keith, I'm going to ask when I get back on the air if we can put that up on the website, the negatives.
Do it.
Do it?
Do it.
Done.
Go
all right.
For it, Art.
All right. Gentlemen, hold on. Keith, you heard the permission given, so go ahead. As soon as you have received it, Keith, go ahead and post the negatives. I don't know if that's even ever been done before, a scan of a negative, but I would like to prove to the audience that they are the legitimate negatives of the photographs that you can see, the full photographs that are scanned perfectly, I think. He says humbly, I've been scanning for quite a while now. But we're going to get the negatives up there. So there you got it. You have it, rather. And if you want to go to my website here in a few moments, those negatives will be available for you to see. All right, once again, everybody, the photographs and now the negatives as well, for whatever that's worth, I don't think we've ever done that before, are on my website or about to be. at www.artbell.com. And by the way, my guests also have a website up. And before we resume the story, I want to get that address out. What is that, Robert? What is the website you have?
www.odysseylink.net.
www.odysseylink.net?
Absolutely. It's odysseylink.net. And through there, you can also order our book.
Yeah, you've got a book out finally,
we
huh?
We do, and if it's all right with you, I'd like to give the 1-800 number for that.
Yeah, go ahead.
Fantastic, thank you. The number is 1-800-905-8367. That's 1-800-905-8367, and operators are standing by to take your orders right now.
Really?
The price.
What is the name of the book?
The name of the book is Link, An Extraterrestrial Odyssey, written, of course, by Dr. Jonathan Reed and myself.
All right, 1-800-905-8367.
8367.
Now, people are going to say, aha, now they're going to make money. They wrote a book, and they're going to make money.
It's about time.
All right. Now, look, I want to continue with the story. You whacked the alien. Here it is on the ground, bleeding alien blood. Skull crushed in. Your dog has collapsed in on itself and is gone. You're in shock. You're sitting there, and time passes.
I could barely stand. I would stand. I would fall down. I would get sick. I was dizzy. I was nauseated. It was as if my body had gone into some kind of convulsion. I have never been so sick. And this lasted for hours. I would get up, I would move away, I would try to lay there and breathe slowly to try to regain some kind of normality of the moment. But it was just almost impossible.
When did you notice this obelisk?
It was about an hour. I think an hour had gone by. This all took place at about 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Right.
And about an hour had gone by in my calculation of just kind of crawling around, crawling away from this creature. And all of a sudden, I started to realize that it seemed like all the sound was gone in the woods, like there was no birds or no air sound, just dead quiet.
Right.
And I thought how strange that was, because normally you hear sounds. And I could hear something that almost wasn't there. It was almost like a harmonic sound. And at first I thought, well, maybe it's a camper or another hiker. And I got really excited, you know, and stood up and kind of looked around and almost fell over again. But then I realized it wasn't that kind of sound. It almost made you feel like you had goosebumps. It was just this hum, this harmonic hum.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started walking down the trail, two or three steps, and then would fall down, and then I'd get up, and I'd crawl for a while, and then I'd get sick, and then I'd listen, and there was nothing. I couldn't find it, and I thought, I'm imagining this, that it's, I'm just losing my mind here. And I'd turn around, and I would get this sound, that almost like it was a directional vector that I could hear coming from one place, and as I moved in one direction, through the brush, I saw this dark-shaped object that I have called the obelisk.
I inappropriately called it a ship. Obviously, to scale, it's not large enough, it would seem, to be a ship. And you corrected me in an earlier broadcast and said, no, not a ship. I don't know what it was. I called it the obelisk, you said.
Right, just a craft.
A craft, whatever, in midair, hanging in midair.
Right. When I first saw it, I could not see it. I could not see underneath it. I was kind of up above. It was down in a little bit of a valley. And there was a lot of brush between me and it, probably 75 feet. So I kind of walked around that brushy area down more toward the front of it.
Right.
Where I could actually see this three-dimensional, six-sided shape. Like a marquee diamond laying on its side. And it was approximately
2.5 feet wide from top to bottom, about 3.5 to 4 feet across from side to side, and about 9 or 9.5 feet long in length.
We've got an excellent photograph of it on the website. All right, so you, here it is in midair. Did you approach the object?
Well, like I said, I walked around it. I kind of got toward it, and it was giving off this strange humming sound. And as I kind of walked down toward it, I kind of leaned partway against it, and I kind of lost my footing. And as I touched it, I found that it was extremely cold. It was cold like dry ice, and it was solid like granite, like polished granite or marble. It had a definite, shiny kind of surface that almost seemed to absorb the light, but it was a heavy tree canopy in this area. And like I said, it was extremely cold. I backed off really quick, but I noticed that when I touched it, the tone changed, the sound changed. Hmm. The harmonic became much more pleasant. Hmm. It wasn't so erratic and disturbing.
So you have no idea the function of this object?
Not completely. No, definitely not at that time.
All right. You had the presence of mind. You had a 35-millimeter camera with you, and you had a video, a camcorder with you, right?
Yes.
So you took some 35-millimeter photographs of the alien's body.
Yes.
I took
the video first.
Video first. All
yes.
right. That's important. The video first. Very dramatic video. Eventually, the public will get to see this.
Yes.
I've seen it. And I've taken sound from it. I won't repeat that right now, but we have the sound clips on our website of you running through the woods, of you tossing your cookies at one point, and quite realistic, actually. At any rate, you also had a 35-millimeter camera.
Yes.
And I don't know when and where you had the presence of mind to get that out, because that gave us the sharp photographs we've got.
Well, I think what happened was, it was a process of just where I was in the moment, and I realized that I had the camera with me. And after being there for quite a while, I thought, my God, I can take a picture of this and find out if I am losing my mind.
Sure.
You know, at least I can bring back something.
So how many pictures did you take of the obelisk and the alien?
At the actual site,
right.
I took 4 rolls of 36 exposures.
Wow. How much of it came out?
How much of it came out?
Yep. I'm what,
actually
I'm,
viewable?
Yes.
Probably 9/10 of it.
So you've got a lot of photographs I don't even have yet.
No. 9/10 of it came out. I don't still have them. A lot of that photographic evidence
was stolen. From your house?
From my house, from when I gave it to some people to do some research, who I was told was some MUFON people, but they turned out not to be.
And they stole it.
Well, I've never seen it again.
All right. The evidence that I now possess in my hands, the photographs, the negatives, all of that, how was that retrieved?
Well, as I said earlier, we split everything I had up into different lots.
Wise move.
So that I could, well, at the time, we were being followed in cars. We were being, we knew that somebody's house had been gone through, and it was getting down to the 5 minute to 12 moment where, you know, if we didn't do something, we were going to lose everything.
Okay.
And I just divided it up. Gary said he would take some. I would take some. I took some to some other people and basically stored it away. Well, this was before they went through my house. And they also took what was in my house.
So that which was stored away is that which I have now?
Yes.
All right. All right. So here you are back in the woods now, Doctor. You've taken your photographs. You've taken the video. You're about to leave, and you're thinking just to leave. But then at the last moment, for some reason, you decide to take the alien body with you.
What I thought was, maybe I can hide this somewhere.
Sure.
Maybe I can hide it and semi-preserve it and bring somebody back here. And I wasn't thinking that this was a great find. I wasn't, you know, being you know, really rational at all.
Were you thinking you might be charged with a crime?
That went through my mind during the hours of being sick at the site.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, you know, that I had maybe killed something that was maybe somebody's pet, maybe somebody's experiment. My mind went in all directions searching for some kind of logic, which I could find none.
You can imagine, Art, what happens to a person's mind when some event like this occurs.
Of course.
First you see your dog brutally killed, and, you know, if that's not enough, my God, what is that thing? And you're dealing with all these incredible things all at once, and it places you into a certain state of mind.
Yeah, it's called shock.
Yes, absolutely.
And until you put yourself in my position, you can't completely or fully imagine what was happening at that moment in my mind, because I was tearing at the logic side of me, saying this is impossible that this is happening, but yet I was confronted with the reality of what I had in front of me.
All right. Do you remember the rationale at the time you decided to take the alien body with you? In other words, why did you decide to take it with you?
Well, like I mentioned, I was thinking, I've got to get out of here. I have to get out of here. It's late in the day. I'm very sick. I got to try to get out of here. I don't even know if I can get back to my car.
By now, what time is it?
Well, about three and a half hours had gone by, as far as my recollection. My watch had stopped at about 2:50.
2:50. All right. So anyway, it's late. It's dark or getting dark?
It's getting darker.
Getting darker. All right.
And
so
my whole thought mindset at that point was, I've got to get out of here. I started to put things back, my camera back in the pack, and I thought, I've got a thermal blanket. A thermal blanket is something that you take with you just in case you have to cover yourself up for a night and survive.
That's right.
It's a Mylar material. I had that. I thought, okay, I'll take this body, I'll throw the Mylar blanket over it, and maybe pile rocks on the blanket around it so no animal will come and eat this thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, the woods are full of animals. And so that's what I started to do. And I laid the blanket out, and I attempted to roll this thing into the blanket, trying not to touch it at all.
Kind of like a burrito.
Yes.
Yes,
sir.
Okay.
So, and I rolled it up inside the thermal blanket, just like you'd roll up a sleeping bag.
Mm-hmm.
And I had two straps from my pack. I tied it around kind of midpoint, and I figured I'd drag it over to the hillside, which was, you know, probably 60 feet from where I was standing, and pile rocks on top of it. And or, you know, some branches. To
sort of a temporary burial place.
To keep it from the animals,
yep,
is what
yep,
I was thinking.
Yep, yep.
Okay, when I picked it up, I found that it was extremely light. I mean, so light that I could barely believe I was picking it up. In actuality, we found out that this whole thing weighed just under 60 pounds. It was like 54 pounds.
Not that heavy, and you had a lot of adrenaline going.
Oh, I was moving on adrenaline like you couldn't believe.
Mm-hmm. So you
grabbed it. I went over to the hillside. I tried to dig out some rocks. I didn't have a shovel. I had nothing as far as tools other than a camping knife. And these rocks were not giving themselves up. Because this is a mountainous area. This is not just a park or, you know, in the lower lands.
Gotcha.
It's up in the hillsides.
Right.
Right at the snow line. And at that point, I couldn't do anything with it. And I thought, okay, well, I'll drag it back down the path, you know, or carry it halfway down the path till I can find a place to put it. So I started walking. Well, all of a sudden, I ended up at my car.
So you were back at your car. All right, doctor, hold it right there. We're at the bottom of the hour. Dr. Jonathan Reed, and up there now, the lab results. How about those photos? Dr. Reed, here is a probably decent guy. All right, here is a fax from somebody I know, a physician who's a friend of mine. Art, this poor Dr. Reed, here is a probably decent guy who had a real experience that he chose to go public with. You can bet on one thing. His life will never, ever be the same. How about those lab results? How about those photos? I don't think those symbols are Masonic. Human beings tore up his residence, but the little guy in the freezer was not a human, nor was it a member of the Trilateral Commission. All right, so, Doctor, we're short on time, and I want to get a lot out in this segment. So, you wrapped up the alien burrito style in this thing, right. And you started, and you got back to your car.
I threw it in the back end of my Jeep, and I headed for home.
These new photos that we have of the Link artifact.
Yes.
Where did you get this artifact?
Well, at the time that I was at the site, and when I went to roll up the creature.
Right.
And hide it, I realized that about 3 feet away from its body, kind of buried a little bit under some ferns, was this shiny-looking object that was, at the time, had some dirt across it. And I just reached down and picked it up. I thought it was something maybe that a camper had left, or almost like a pop can, and silver in color.
Right.
About the same size. And as soon as I got within, my hand within about 2 or 3 inches of it, I realized it wasn't a pop can. And I picked it up, probably a real stupid thing to do, not knowing what it was.
Potentially dangerous.
But I was not thinking clearly. And I picked it up, and I looked at it, and I thought, okay. So I just threw it right inside the thermal blanket, wrapped it up, and took it home. Now,
one of
the reasons that we previously didn't mention this was because I don't have that object. I do not any longer own or possess that.
What happened? Is that one of the things that was stolen from your house?
No, it's not. It's one of the things that I took after all this happened, when this event was taking place and after I left my house in shambles. I had sent this away. This was something that I had literally mailed away to myself somewhere else. And I needed to get it looked at and get it verified.
Of course.
Which I have done. Where do you want me to begin?
Well, I guess I would like to know what results.
I had it analyzed at a university in Osaka, Japan.
Yes.
And some of the people that helped me do this are the people that I call the Alliance, people that helped store me away and keep me safe for a long time.
All right. So it went to Japan. They analyzed it?
It went to Japan with me.
With you?
Yes, with me.
Oh, now that's new. I had not heard that. All right, so you went to Japan with the object.
And I showed it to some very secure people in Japan. The Japanese culture embraces the phenomena, the UFOlogy phenomena.
I understand,
in a totally different way than the people in the United States.
I understand. So what did they conclude?
They looked at it, they dissected it in analysis, and they found that it was made out of very unusual materials. It weighs 107.3 grams. That's 3.75 ounces.
The photographs, the photographs never before seen on my website tonight are extremely clear.
Those were taken in Japan.
In Japan?
Yes, while it was being analyzed.
All right.
I held this thing myself at one time, Art.
You did?
Yes, and it's amazing.
All right, it's impossible to describe. You've got to see it. It's got hieroglyphics, what appear to be hieroglyphics on it. Has anybody analyzed what that could possibly mean? It looks very much like some objects purported to be from the Roswell crash.
Well, it's never been cataloged, any of those symbols, and it has been looked at through many eyes, trying to understand if they have any earthly meanings. Nobody, as of yet, has come up with anything other than and this is kind of fascinating, there happens to be one of the symbols, which is the very small one, and I'm not sure if the picture you have shows that. There are actually four symbols.
Yes,
so
I have them.
One small one that sits alone by itself is a very similar shape to the obelisk craft. That symbol has been found in Mexico, in Egypt, and in China. That symbol is very similar to the Ra symbol in the Egyptian hieroglyphs, which translates into many meanings. It means the letter R. It also means the meaning of an exit or an entrance, or a communication from one point to another.
Or a door.
And we don't know if these symbols are words.
Well, we do know one thing, that when that symbol, which is literally a button, this thing is a controller of sorts.
Of some kind, yes.
When that symbol is pressed in the right sequence, that piece of material, that structure that looks silver and is hard like metal, I mean like iron.
Yes.
It closes. It becomes very, very pliable.
Wow.
It closes with a memory, as if it's going to close onto a surface of like your arm. And then you push that again and it opens back up with the same memory so that you could remove it.
So then a speculation would be this was something the alien had been wearing.
Yes.
All right. Why do you not any longer have this? What happened to it?
Well, in dealing with the people who have helped me, one of the biggest problems is having some kind of safety, some personal safety. And I was told that as long as I had this in my possession, I was in very, very serious danger. And they were right. So I gave it up. I said, store it. You know, analyze it, store it, and do whatever we have to keep it safe.
Right.
And that's what I've done. Now, at this moment, and I want everybody to hear this, I do not know where it is. I don't know what country it's in. I don't know how to get it back. But I have one contact who supposedly will contact someone else and contact someone else and contact someone else, as
yes.
in a network of people, very similar to a combination. And that's the only way that it could ever be retrieved.
But you think you could retrieve it, potentially?
Potentially, yes. Do I think I could do it alone? Absolutely not.
All right.
I would need these people.
All right. Well, the photographs are up there for all to see, and they are extremely clear, and so I'm sure we'll get a lot of feedback on them.
The materials that it's made out of are really unique. It's a radical mixture of a silicon polymers, beryllium aluminum, which is a unique substance in itself, manganese, magnesium, zinc, copper, bismuth, gold, and other undetermined materials.
All right. Now, coming back to here you are in your car. You're going home because what else are you going to do? So you throw this thing, toss it in the back of the car, and you head home, right?
I headed home thinking I'm going to take this thing somewhere. I went to the ranger station, which there was no one there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is the closest thing I could go to where
some
I could
kind of
get
authority.
Some help.
An authority, yes.
Right, and there was no one there.
So you went home.
I was violently sick. I proceeded to go home. I had to stop probably every 10 miles and get out of the car to throw up and to try to regain some strength. And I found my way home. And I got home. I drove myself basically into my carport. I sat there thinking, you know, has this really happened? Was this just a bad dream or a nightmare or a bad trip?
Right.
And I looked in the mirror, the rearview mirror in the car, and I could see the thermal blanket wrapped up in the back of the Jeep.
No dream.
And I went in the house. You know, I just went in the house. I couldn't deal with it. I just could not deal with it at that time. And later on, you know, an hour or so later, I came back out, and it was there, and I thought, well, what can I do with this? Where can I hide it? Where can I put it? And I thought, well, it's dead. It's neat. I'll put it in the freezer in the garage. At least I don't have to deal with it.
That's where you put bodies.
And that's where I put it.
And you thought it was dead.
That's right.
So into the freezer it went.
Absolutely.
And yeah. How long did it stay in that freezer, Doctor, before you retrieved it?
Well, about 6 hours went by, and I mean, I couldn't sleep. I couldn't move. I went in the house and called my friends. I got nobody. I left messages. You know, I was pacing. I was trying to figure out, you know, what in the hell was I going to do? And I went back out and drug it out and looked just to see if it was really there. And it was there. It was still there. I drug it into the open side of the garage, basically entering the part of my house.
Right.
And I got out the video camera and I videotaped it.
Right.
And people say, how could you do that? How could you come to do that? I didn't have anything else to do. In my mind was saying, don't believe this. This isn't true. This isn't happening to you. This isn't in front of your face.
All right, so gather evidence, obviously.
So, unconsciously, I just did it. It was what I had in hand. So,
Jonathan's brain went into overdrive.
I hear you. And
so, parts of it that took over.
You did that. Is that when you took the samples, by the way?
No, the samples were done later when Gary and I did an examination. We removed the body from the freezer. We unwrapped it in the garage on a large table. And we did the close-up examination.
Okay, and that's when the samples were taken.
That's
from.
When we took the sample.
All right. At some point, this is the horror of it for a lot of people. The alien was in the freezer, and you came out to your garage, and that freezer was making noise, wasn't it?
Right. 3.5 days from the moment that I brought it home, I had handled the body 4 and 5 times.
Right.
I had shown it to my girlfriend, to Gary, to several people.
Right.
And put it back in the freezer. This was a, you know, frozen piece of meat. But it was frozen in a different way. It wasn't frozen solid like a piece of pork or a steak. It wasn't like hard as rock. It was still a little bit pliable. And we took it out. We analyzed it. We did that. We took photographs. We videotaped that. Took the samples. I put it back in. I went out to the freezer a couple days later because I was having a professor from my university come over to take a look at what I had.
Yes, and?
And I heard this noise that I thought was, it sounded like the compressor was going out.
On your freezer?
Because it was an older freezer. It wasn't brand new.
Right.
And it was kind of a scratching sound while it was running. I could hear the freezer running, but it just was a strange, erratic sound.
Great. Yes.
And then I thought, well, okay, the compressor's running, so that's okay. And then I thought, well, maybe I've got rats in my garage, because it was an exterior garage from the house.
Right.
And I thought, well, if that's the case, you know, I got to get them out of here, or if the compressor's going out, I better start cleaning out my freezer or my fridge in the house.
Right, of course.
So I just thought, well, I'm going to check the temperature inside the freezer.
Sure.
Because there's a thermometer.
See if it's still.
To the door.
Yep.
So I popped the lid open, and this thing sat up and screamed at me. And I just lost it. I just totally lost control of myself. And I slammed the lid, and I ran in the house as fast as I could.
Oh, my God. It screamed at you.
It screamed like I've never heard a sound before, except similar to what it did when I hit it in the woods. And I'm thinking, at that moment, I'm not thinking, but after I'm in the house, in a panic, I'm thinking, how can this happen? This is impossible. I know what I put in. I know what I've been examining. I know what I've taken pieces of the skin. This thing cannot be moving. But it was.
It was moving. It was moving.
And like I said, I went in the house. I called my friend Gary, who had helped me through all of this. He had seen it. He had been there. I mean, we had handled this thing. And he, you know, I got a hold of him. He came over. I said, look, we have a bigger problem. And I said, it's alive. And he thought, you know, I was losing my mind. And he thought I was pulling a joke on him. And I said, I'm not kidding you. And I took him out, and I showed it to him. And I opened the lid, and it sat up and moved and screamed again.
What kind of, may I ask what kind of scream it was, or what it sounded like to you, or?
Well, on your other show, we did play that scream. Because in later days, after that point, I actually recorded that scream on tape.
Yeah, I know.
It was just, I mean, like a banshee-type scream. In fact, the scream was so loud and
when
so strong, it almost made me feel like it was pushing the air against my chest.
Mm-hmm.
After
I might have some of that.
A few hours had gone by, and I had called Gary back.
I'm trying to play some of this. Hold on just one second.
Calm me down.
This is from a previous show.
Practically around the ceiling.
We may get it.
We went out to look again.
To look again. Consistent story.
And I figured, you know, we went out and looked. We did the same thing. I opened the freezer so that I could know that I was not imagining this.
I'm playing this from a previous show.
And the same thing happened. And when the freezer was opened, this thing let out a scream like I have never heard before. It literally, the force of the sound made you feel like something was pushing against your chest.
The air around it as it screams actually bubbles and moves.
It felt like the air was moving.
God.
And at that time, it was just, you know, open and closed. And later on, I felt like I had to try to document this.
Of course.
So I took my camera, and I took the recorder, and I turned it on, and I again opened the freezer, and that's when I recorded this sound.
Would you play the sound for us once again, please?
Yes, I will. Hold on.
Okay, here it comes. I say the same thing now, my God. Does that sound familiar, Doctor?
Yeah, too familiar.
Yeah. Okay, well, there it was. Now, Doctor, I've got to stop that thing from rolling. I'm getting it from my own website. People can hear that on my website.
It's certainly a sound that turns your blood to ice.
It does. Then, all of a sudden, here come what, for a lack of a better name, I'll call the men in black, who ransack your house. They take the alien. They take the freezer. They take the garage down, and as we heard described earlier, and you're on the run, and somewhere here recently, Doctor, you got shot. How in heaven's name were you shot? Where and when?
Well, we had gone to San Diego after your show to present this information to the San Diego UFO Society.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm thinking things are much calmer now. You know, I've presented this information to the public.
Yes.
Both on your forum and in person, and I'm a lot more relaxed. You know, I figure, okay, things are back to normal as far as I don't have to worry so much because you kind of let it out of the bag.
Sure.
So I went home from San Diego.
We don't have a lot of time here, so.
Okay, and when I went back to where I was staying at the time, which was in Canada, I went to sleep. I got up the next day. I went out. I had breakfast. I got a newspaper, and as I was coming back to my car, a man forced me against the side of my car at gunpoint with a gun in my chest. A man in his early 30s, dressed in a jogging suit. He said nothing. He pushed me back. As he pushed me back, I grabbed the gun, and I forced it away from the center of my chest, up and to my left, and it went off. Probably because I grabbed it, but it was a reaction. It was not conscious. Okay?
And then what?
And it fired.
And it fired,
so you went through my shoulder.
You went to the hospital, obviously.
No, I didn't. It fired, and I fell to the ground. I thought it had maybe missed me. At that moment, I didn't even think about it. I didn't even know that it had hit me. I thought it just made a bang, and it It missed me.
I got you. Doctor, you're going to have to hold on for this again. Dr. Jonathan Reed and Robert Wraith are my guests. And we're talking about the alien in the freezer story with a whole lot of supporting evidence. If you want to see it and or hear it, it's all on the web on my website right now at www.artbell.com. It'll be right there at the top of the list of the latest news items. You can't miss it. Examine the photographs, the scans of the negatives, which I don't think anybody has ever done before. I did that on the spur of the moment. And, of course, the associated sound clips, one of which is the scream of that alien when it sat straight up in the freezer. Anyway, we'll get back to all of this and some of your phone calls this hour. The white LED track light has got to be one of the premium Christmas presents you could give to anybody you love this year. 2 or 3 years. I mean, you've got to worry about the batteries leaking more than you do anything else. And then once the 2 or 3 years is gone, you put 3 more batteries in and you get another 2 or 3 years of operation. Now, with the uncertain weather conditions, I guess we'll put it that way ahead, Y2K, can you think of a better present to give, the gift of light, to one of somebody you love, yourself, your family? Here's the deal. If you buy one, it's $34.95. If you buy 3 or more, you pay only $29.95 each. Don't have to go to the store in the mall for this one. All you've got to do is pick up the phone in the morning before stock runs out, and it's going fast. By the way, Sea Crane Company is very proud to announce that the U.S. military has now adopted their first LED flashlight, a special version of the CC Expedition light, which you can also get. So, the gift of light. Call Bob Crane in the morning. 1-800-522-8863. Again, 1-800-522-8863. They've got it. The gift of light at the Sea Crane Company. How would you like to look and feel 10 years younger in 10 weeks? Now there's proof that aging can be slowed down and even reversed. You've heard me talk several times about the incredible age-reversing benefits of HGH, human growth hormone. Well, according to many scientific studies, higher HGH levels can help you look and feel younger. That's why I'm taking Ultimate HGH, a natural formula without hormones designed to boost your body's own production of HGH. If your goal is to help improve energy, stamina, lose unwanted fat, diminish wrinkles, enhance memory, immune function, and vision, then Ultimate HGH is for you too. When you order 2 bottles of Ultimate HGH, you'll get a 3rd bottle absolutely free. That's only $33 a month, a tremendous savings off the typical $100 a month for comparable products. Plus, you receive a free audio cassette tape on the incredible benefits of HGH. So, call Great American Products now at 1-800-557-4627. That's 1-800-557-4627. One more time, 1-800-557-4627. Once again, Dr. Jonathan Reed and Robert Wraith. Gentlemen, welcome back.
Thank you, Art.
Thank you, Art.
The name of your book again, please?
Link, an Extraterrestrial Odyssey.
Self-published?
Yes.
Did you include photographs and so forth?
Yes, we did.
You did, so it's all in there.
It's all in there and more.
All right.
And let me say something a little bit about the book. The book was written from an emotional standpoint. Jonathan wanted people that read the book to really feel what he experienced. That was very important.
Oh, I think that's good. The number for the book, and that's the only place you can get it. It's not at Amazon.com or anything yet.
You can either go to our website at www.odysseylink.net.
Right.
It tells you where everything is there.
Right.
Or for those of you who don't have a computer, you can call 1-800-905-8255. 1-800-905-8367.
That's 1-800-905-8367. All right. Doctor, you were shot.
I was shot. And the unique thing of what happened during this moment was the gun went off, and the gentleman that had his face in my face looked really surprised, like this wasn't supposed to happen.
Yeah, he wasn't supposed to shoot.
I fell to the ground against the car that
right.
I was up against.
Right.
He kind of halfway fell a little bit, like, you know, he had a hold of my shoulder, my other shoulder at that time, my right shoulder.
Right.
And then stood back up very calmly and very slowly, looked around, took the gun, put it underneath his, like a jogging suit jacket, holstered it, and walked away. He didn't rob me. He didn't check my wallet. He didn't do anything. He didn't panic. He never said a word. And that's
so
unusual.
So, but here you are shot.
I'm laying against the car. A guy came over, a man kind of came running over and said, what happened? You know, did you get robbed? What's going on?
Right.
And I said, no, I think I'm okay. I'm okay. He says, no, you're not. There's blood all over your arm. And that's the first time I realized that I had gotten shot.
Mm-hmm. That happens to a lot of people. They really don't realize at first they've been shot.
Well, I thought I felt the heat of the gun.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it missed me. But then I realized that it had gone through the surface of my skin and out through my back. And basically, this was a very small caliber, and we know what caliber it is because we retrieved the shell.
What was it?
It was a 9mm.
9mm, that's not that small.
And it went right through basically my trapezius muscle and out the back.
Mm-hmm. So then, what did you do? I mean,
the guy helped me up, and he says, "Well, I'll go call an ambulance." I said, "No, no. I mean, I'm back in shock. I'm in fear of my life at this moment, and I just was panicking. And I got in my car and I drove back to where I was staying. I was staying with some people who were basically putting me up. Now, these were people who were the Alliance,
right?"
The guy I was staying with, and if you recheck the other program, he was a doctor. He was a physician,
mm-hmm.
a medical physician. Well, I walked in. His wife called her husband. He came home, and he cleaned the wound out, and he treated it and wrapped it up. And I stayed there for months.
Recovering, actually,
yeah.
I guess, huh?
And luckily, it didn't break any major artery. It didn't. A little bit lower, it would have went right through my collarbone. But
you've been on the run.
Yes,
ever since this whole thing began, you've been on the run.
One way or another, yes.
Needless to say, this has given Jonathan a new view on the fact that we have a right as citizens to defend ourselves.
Absolutely.
And as a matter of fact, when Jonathan looked into getting a bulletproof vest, Art, do you know it is illegal for him to own a bulletproof vest?
In the United States.
In the United States. It's illegal for us to protect
ourselves. I had no idea.
That is utterly absurd.
Because the police can't take you out. That's why it's illegal.
So just the police can have bulletproof vests?
Just the police can have bulletproof vests.
That's right.
Well, that's insanity.
They're trying to take everything away from us to defend ourselves.
Well, in the state of Washington, as you know, you can get a permit to carry a concealed weapon.
Yes,
well,
you can. This is one of the last bastions of some monicum of self-protection.
Yeah, out west here, we have several states, mine included, where you can do that. And
let's put it this way. I never used to like the idea of weapons. I now feel it's a necessary tool.
Yeah. I understand. Believe me, I understand. All right, so we've presented an awful lot of evidence tonight. I don't know what people are going to think of it. There's no way to know what people are going to think of it, but it is pretty solid evidence, medical evidence, evidence from your landlord, evidence from a MUFON person who has seen what the rest of the public has not seen. I would like to take some calls from the public and let them ask you questions, if you're up for that.
Sure.
Is there any part of the story you want to get in that we have missed?
Well, just that this is an ongoing struggle to try to deal with just me wanting to tell a story. You know, I something happened to me, and isn't it interesting that if none of this is true, why do people keep, you know, driving us off the road, you know, taking the things that I have?
I had my computer sabotaged.
When did that occur?
That occurred about 6 months ago. Someone took my computer completely out, a hacker.
We also
I had to purchase a new hard drive and everything else.
All right, we also lost pictures off of the website. Now, something to note here. This website is independently run and owned, not by Robert or myself.
Right.
It is done by another gentleman who is just a fabulous computer guy. We
Fantastic,
call him the
yes.
web author, Cole the web author. Without him, we would not be worldwide, just like yourself, Art. But this website has told people this story. The whole story is up there of what happened in chronological order. But we had pictures, the similar pictures to what you have, but different pictures, more pictures. People took them and stole them off the web, reproduced them, and somebody called me who was visiting Italy and said, did you know these pictures are being distributed in a booklet?
Oh, my.
I said, no.
Well, that's, you know, I'm sorry to say it's not that unusual on the web. People steal things all the time.
But what was interesting, Art, is what the text said that was with the pictures.
And what was that?
They said that Robert and I were living high on the hog outside of London laughing at everyone.
Oh, really?
Absolutely absurd.
Actually, you've been on the run, and a lucrative medical practice you had is all way gone, right?
That's for sure. Now, I have since regained some of my credentials, and I have been asked to teach this fall in Japan at a university.
Oh, no kidding.
So my life somewhat is going to come back to normal if I accept that position.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, my life has been destroyed. I will never have what I had, at least in peace of mind.
This has definitely been an ongoing situation. Jonathan has been abducted. He's been terrorized.
Shot.
He's been shot. All manner of terroristic activities.
And people say, why didn't you just run down to the police department and turn in a report?
Yeah, right.
Art, you know damn well what it's like to try to get certain people to give you information so that you can protect your beloved family.
That's right.
You know what that's like.
I do indeed.
And that's exactly what we have here. Another case where people say, well, Art and, well, Dr. Reed, why don't you do this? Why don't you do that? It's not that simple. It's never that simple. And in a case as serious as this one, it's impossible.
One of the things.
Well, I think, let me tell you, too, something. I think one of the reasons that you get a very angry reaction to your story is because it's so well documented. In other words, most stories of this kind are just sort of told, and you've got to believe this, you've got to believe a description, you've got to believe this or that. With your story, you've got photographs, you've got physical evidence, you've got witnesses, you've got a lot, and so it's such a strong story that for those who don't believe in this sort of thing, they get angry.
They get absolutely furious because they're grasping at fumes. What was that fax that that came over your show the other day when Richard was on your show about, well, this can't be real. Richard has too much information.
Yeah.
And the
right,
same thing with the photographs.
The photographs were
blurry.
That's another thing.
Absolutely asinine.
That's another thing. You put a photograph up on the website of a UFO, and a lot of times people take pictures of UFOs that do come out blurry because they're scared, they're in shock. You know, they don't get a good photograph. Well, in your case, you got very clear photographs, and so what's the complaint? What's the bitch? They're too clear.
Too clear. And
I want to say something. In reality, though, we have had 90% positive reinforcing support from thousands, thousands of emailers and your listeners, Art. We have dedicated the book to you and your listeners.
Oh, I didn't know that.
For them and yourself helping us to get this information out. Without you and them, I would have never done this. I would have found a rock and crawled under for good.
Well, hey, guys, I'm going to be, as requested, sending the information back to you.
Yes.
And hopefully you'll send me an autographed copy of the book.
Absolutely.
Oh, absolutely, Art. Definitely.
Boy, would I love that.
We'll definitely get one.
I would like to hand it to you.
Personally.
Well, that sounds dangerous. All right, look, I want to take a few phone calls here. I have no idea what's going to come up. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Dr. Reed and Robert Wraith. Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes, this is Jeremy in Louisville, Kentucky.
Jeremy, you're going to have to yell at us. You're not
okay,
too loud.
Is this better?
Loud as you can. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm sorry about this. I was just wanted to ask Dr. Reed about that that device that he found.
Right.
Yeah. Last time you was on, I was wondering about more information about what kind of needles or pins were coming out from it.
They were gold needles, three gold needles protruding from the bottom of the surface. And at the base of each one was an emerald-like sphere that it was going right through the center. These were thought to basically be impaled into the arm of the wearer.
Oh.
So this is not just an electronic device. It's also basically biologically driven as well.
Yeah, in other words, that was a biological interface.
In the sample in Japan, they found organic material, vein-like things running through the blend of metals.
Yeah, almost like a plant-like construction of material.
Does that help you, caller?
Yes, it does. Thanks a lot.
All right. Well, thank you very much for the call. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Dr. Reed and Robert Wraith. Hi.
Yeah, hi, Art. Bill here.
Bill, you too must yell at us. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I just turned off my TV. I can understand why there's problems with people believing these gentlemen. It's because there's enough evidence for people to attack or to accept.
Yep.
And that allows for people with either beliefs or disbeliefs on this subject to support that kind of thinking.
That's true.
My position is that I don't care about whether it's true or not. I just want to know what he thinks he understands as a result of this that makes it meaningful to risk his life and the lives of others to go public.
All right. Well, that's a decent enough question. And really, Doctor, it's right. You could have shut up about all of this and gone on with life. What was so compelling about it that made you decide to go public?
Two of my friends that were involved with me during these 9 days, I thought were both dead. One of them is. I found this wonderful woman that was like a second mother to me, and I found her dead after 3 hours earlier speaking to her. She was holding material, some of my evidence for me, and I found her dead in her kitchen and no sign of any of the material she was holding for me. My friend Gary, I thought was dead the last time we were on the show.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that he wasn't.
He was not dead.
But he is one step away from it. He will never, ever be the same. He is a broken man beyond any type of... He was beaten and abducted.
Absolutely horrendous shape.
How did you keep your own sanity, Doctor?
I can only say that I had the support of a lot of good people who tried to take care of me. And from time to time, I lose it. You know, and one of the reasons I lose it is because this shouldn't be happening. You know, Richard Hoagland said the other night, he says, there's a rogue element within NASA.
That's right.
Well, you damn well better believe that there's a rogue element that
Definitely.
Are keeping us all blind to the real truth that's going on. And I've held those people in front of me. I know they're real. This is not a fallacy. This is a reality. And you people out there, and a lot of you know, I mean, a lot of the people, I've talked to hundreds of people. They know the truth, but they're scared to death.
All right, Doctor. Hold it there. We're at the bottom of the hour. I back to my guests. Gentlemen, are you there?
Yes, I am, Martin. If I could, I'd like to add something about that last call.
Yeah, sure.
The interesting thing is whenever science or theocracy or religion is challenged, it can have dire effects. Giordano Bruno lost his life and Galileo his freedom by bringing new information to the world.
Yes.
And to watch a person die in ignorance because you don't have the intestinal fortitude to come forward with what you know to be true is a very difficult life to lead. And Jonathan was left between a rock and a hard place, and he chose to be a stand-up individual and come forward with the information, much like Mr. Chacon and Larry, who came forward of their own initiative to give this information freely to the world tonight.
Boy, I hear you, and I'm with that all the way. I mean, these are people who stepped forward, and they seemed entirely credible to me, so.
Very much so.
All right. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Dr. Reed and Robert Wraith. Hi.
How are you, gentlemen, tonight?
All right, sir. Where are you?
I'm calling from Utah. My name is Jerry.
Okay, Jerry.
Hey, I agree with Mr. Reed and his assessment of society today that I'm a conceal and carry owner myself. I don't like it, but unfortunately society dictates that I do that. I would like to offer Mr. Reed a chance. I do have access to a bulletproof vest, and I would like to donate one to him if he would be willing to accept that offer.
Thank you, but I think I've already taken care of that situation.
Okay.
Although that's incredibly appreciated.
It's very generous.
And again, Art, this is the kind of support we get quite often from your wonderful listeners.
Well, that is amazing. I'm glad that you've taken care of it, and I really am shocked to hear that a private citizen, it's unlawful for a private citizen to have a bulletproof vest. That's amazing.
In the United States, it is a federal law.
Yeah, it's a felony.
In other words, you can own a gun to get into a gunfight if you have to protect your life.
Do you think the
people... But you can't buy a vest to protect your life.
That's
absolutely
right.
Do you think the people that are coming after you are going to care about a federal law? I mean, they're coming to kill you.
Right. That's a good point, Robert, is I want to say, you know, people sincerely say, and they have good questions, and they say, well, why didn't you just follow the normal rules? And the reason I haven't followed the normal rules and I've stayed alive is because these people don't play by normal rules.
Besides, what the hell are the normal rules for a situation like this?
That's
absolutely
right. Right. And these people aren't following the law. The law are for the majority of what I call the sheep, the rest of us that follow in blind faith, thinking that everything is going to be fine and that everything we are told is the truth. Well, it's not.
I'm with you. First time caller line, you're on the air with Dr. Reed, Robert Wraith, and Art Bell. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Bell. My name is Brooks. I'm from Vaughan, Washington.
All right.
I saw one of those things once. Little silvery things. I don't know, whatever it was. I work in Seattle. And I was coming down the Alaskan Way Viaduct, and it was about 1986, and there was one of these things, and it came down out of the atmosphere.
Now, what do you mean, the obelisk? What we call the obelisk? Is that what you're
referring to? No, this is a disc-type thing, but whatever was inside had to have been the same size that he had in his internet picture. The thing with the pink eyes, I don't know if he's got that picture up there yet, but
he's talking about the creature.
Yes.
Yeah, the one that was in the freezer?
Yes.
But as what I wanted to relate to is I saw this disc come down, and it looked like a little dome thing on top, and it looked like it opened up, and it had like a fire-type flame coming out of the top, and it came down and hovered over the section of Fourth and Royal Brome. And when I got underneath it, I was on my motorcycle, it felt like it was like gravity coming down in reverse. And it looked like there was a little TV screen in the front of the thing.
So you had an experience, in other words.
Basically, yes. But when I saw the picture, I was thinking that, whatever was inside that thing had to have been you know, one of the same kind of creatures he was looking at. Now, later on, when I was, I lived up in the Fremont area of Seattle at the same time, I went down by Gasworks Park, and I saw these weird-looking red eyes with these sparkles coming out of it. It was like they were following me around or something. Now, I don't know exactly how, you know, I've read a few books on this stuff, but, you know, it completely disrupted my life after I saw this thing.
Well, it would do that. Of course it would disrupt your life. Now, obviously other people have had different and or somewhat similar experiences, Doctor, and their lives, too, have been changed forever. Many, though, have chosen not to go public, not to talk about it, and not to go through the hell that you have been through. I still applaud you for going public. I'm not so sure that I would have, with the kind of story that you have.
Well, I don't know if it's been such a good idea or not, but like I was trying to say earlier, and I apologize for getting so emotional, but I did this because I felt my friends had helped me, and I watched them one by one basically drop away from me.
Yeah.
And I am left with this legacy to know that because of what I did, I affected and impacted their lives. And that can't be changed. And at this point, I don't want to have them be gone for nothing. You know, I want this to mean something for what they at least tried to do for me. You know, and I don't care if anybody doesn't believe this. But I know a lot of people do.
And a lot of people do.
A lot of people have seen things like this and are being quiet about it because they've been threatened or they're scared to death. Well, it's about time somebody said, this stuff is happening.
Do you think the entire incident, Doctor, with the alien, when it began with your dog, if it had not begun that way, If the alien had not been attacked by your dog, if the alien had not attacked back, if you hadn't reacted in the way you had, if everything had been different and there had been an encounter, do you think it would have all come out in a different way?
Well, I definitely think it would have been different. But one of the biggest things that I've learned by talking to other people who have experienced similar things, and we're saying similar creatures and people who have been in the know of this information, like, you know, people like Whitley Strieber and Jaime Masson from Mexico.
Yes.
And Jacques Vallée.
Yes.
I've talked to these people. I've listened to their stories. They've listened to mine. And I have said, would I have done this different? What would have been different? What could have been different? Well, chances are, if it would have been 1 second later, I would have never seen this thing. Because what might have happened, and this is speculation, but speculation with some degree of accuracy, if my dog had not have got hold of this thing's arm that may have had this Link controller on it, the thing probably would have shifted into another dimension.
And it would have just not been there when you came over the hill.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because this vibration, this paint shaker-like shaking motion, is what is now thought to be changing from one dimension to another.
That's right. I've heard that from many, many, many people. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Dr. Reed and Robert Wraith. Hi.
Hi, how are you guys?
All right. Where are you, huh?
I'm in Miamisburg, Ohio.
All right.
I have a question for John and also a comment or two.
Sure.
The question is you said Gary is okay. I mean, it's alive, but you didn't speculate, or I didn't hear you say he was all right.
I think barely alive is what he said.
He is a shell of a man.
Mm-hmm. Gary's anything but all right. Gary is a mess.
Oh, man.
He's been put through the most rigorous psychological hell you could imagine.
He was also physically beaten. In his, you know, around and about his head, to where it did some very serious damage. I mean, we're not talking about just, you know, a whack, you know, on the arm. We're talking about somebody beating him literally to death.
Mm. Okay. I'm sorry to hear that. Is there any way, though, I could get your book on audio cassette?
Well, we're working on that. We're going to work on getting them on audio cassette for the sight impaired. And, you know, we can only do so much at a time.
Yeah.
You know, this is a good point to say. The reason this hasn't come out sooner is because I've had tremendous problems. Robert's had tremendous problems getting a publisher to back us without backing out himself.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're fine with it in the beginning, and then all of a sudden there's some kind of problem. They're nervous. Something's happened.
But big problems, like one of the printer's building burned down.
Oh, that's a problem.
I mean, this isn't a little thing. These are big issues. But people don't realize that this stuff is going on.
I do.
Thank you.
I do.
When I talked to Whitley after the first time we were on Art Bell, he had mentioned to me the hell he went through to get certain things published.
Oh, unbelievable.
Manuscripts had been lost.
Absolutely.
I mean, that man was put through absolute hell.
Oh, absolutely.
And he has been so supportive to our cause.
His house, by the way, has almost burned down. I mean, he's been terrorized. No question about it. And I know that to be a fact. What's a good friend? West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Dr. Jonathan Reed and Robert Wraith. Hello.
Hello, Art Bell.
Hi.
Actually, listening to this is kind of making me angry because, you know, you have had people on like Stephen Greer, Steve Bassett, Peter Gersten, so many of your guests, including Whitley Strieber, that have said, give us some concrete evidence. My word, you've got it. Gentlemen, are you working with any of these guys? Are these guys working with you? Are you sharing this information? If you're ever going to have anything to break this open, don't you have it now?
That's right. Well, we're trying to share it with the world. And unfortunately, and again, we have a problem. The problem is some organizations are not as legitimate as what they want us all to believe.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I won't mention any names or throw any mud.
Absolutely.
But I have had to carefully, painstakingly, go to private individuals who I trusted, who I could find that would help me through this one step at a time. And like I said, this is, you know, basically a team operation. I've had tremendous support from your listeners, Art, who have kept me in their homes, who have fed me, who have loaned me their cars for months at a time, who have supported me. This is the only way I have survived.
Gosh, I wish I could help. Art Bell, I have a question for you.
Sure.
I'm going to raise your right hand and swear that you will tell the truth. Have you been coerced, threatened, bought in any way to sort of discredit these guys?
No. Well, I have been threatened, not by official sources, but unofficially I've been threatened for presenting the story on the air. Yeah, you bet.
Well, it just seems to me that that's proof in itself also.
So I don't have to hold up my right hand about that. There's been a landslide of...
One other thing, Art. Have you been bribed to let us do this?
No. Of course not.
Because that's just as important.
No, of course not.
As you can see, this is one of the reasons we're on the Art Bell Show, Coast to Coast. This is one of the reasons we trust Art.
Well,
Art has
stood up
for this kind of information. He's allowed an open forum for this kind of information.
That's one of the reasons I get in so damn much trouble, too. But
oh, God bless you, Art
I'm
Bell.
Simply old enough not to give a damn anymore. All right, thank you very much. We're so short on time. First time caller line, you're on the air with Dr. Jonathan Reed and Robert Wraith. Hello.
Oh, my name is Brooks again from Vaughan, Washington, and I'm sorry.
Brooks,
we're only allowed
to take one call per customer per night. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Yeah, hello, Art. This is Buck from Virginia.
Hi there.
Hi. Dr. Reed, I find you very credible. However, a lot of people obviously may have different opinions. On December 21st, 1998, Major Ed Dames was a guest on this program. And he expressed a lot of disbelief in your claims.
Actually, he was the one who thought that there was a shadow box. I'm trying to remember how he put it. A shadow box.
The obelisk
photo. The obelisk, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Nobody is perfect. And
And
everybody has the right to their opinion.
Absolutely. And Ed Dames simply made a mistake there. We have proven
a
no
major
digital tampering. We have proven no shadow box. We have proven those are real objects.
Yeah, we've got the negatives up there for you to look at for what it's worth, sir.
Absolutely. And remember that Ed Dames is a human being like anyone else and is entitled to make mistakes.
That's right. And he admits that a certain percentage of what he does is a mistake. I forget, 10%.
10%.
Depending on how many remote viewers are used. West of the Rockies, we're short on time. You're on the air. Hi.
Yes, sir. Mr. Bell, this is Robert from the San Joaquin Valley, California, sir.
Hi.
Yes, sir. First, I want to say to you from my heart, I wish you and your family a healthy and joyful holiday season.
Thank you.
Gentlemen, just one question. I listened to you on Mr. Bell's show before. And this is a hypothetical question, a scenario that I'd like to have you comment on, if you will. I represent the ETs. They came through a van that brought them to the drop-off points. The van had all of these antennas on it, looked like a porcupine. And they were there to take samples. And earth samples as well as other materials.
Sir, this is obviously a long, drawn-out story that we're not going to have time to properly present it. If you follow me. Well, he's gone. All right. It was obviously a pretty long story, and we have like a minute left. So we'll just move on. East of the Rockies, you're on the air very quickly with Dr. Jonathan Reed and Robert Wraith.
Yes, I wanted to tell your listeners I'm calling from Hamilton, Ontario, Canada.
Yes, sir.
And the intimidation that their friend received physically.
Yes.
Happens at the federal political level here. My best friend, it happened to him. He was taken away for a couple of weeks and convinced not to enter into federal politics. It happens for a number of different reasons, including the one that you're mentioning.
Yeah, in other words, this story of a shadow government or a shadow cabal behind everything.
He knows intimately now about the Freemasons.
All right. Appreciate the call. There you are, gentlemen. Listen, we're out of time. I want to give you one more opportunity. You've got a book, finally.
Yes.
It's taken a long time. And again, the name of your book is?
Rank. An Extraterrestrial Odyssey.
All right.
And the phone number is 1-800-905-8367, and operators are standing by. The book price is $19.95 plus shipping and handling.
All right. 1-800-905-8367, $19.95, and it is the story that you've heard here and a lot more.
And we will be speaking at the International UFO Conference in March in Laughlin, Nevada.
Absolutely.
That ought to be something.
And one last thing real quick. I wanted to thank all your listeners and you, Art, and all those that came on tonight in defense of this very important case. Mr. Chacone, who took a great risk. Unfortunately, there was a very small part of the sample left, but he did manage to get us the data that we needed.
Indeed.
Thank you all so much for helping me.
You too, and everybody else out there, good night. Take care. Good night, y'all.
Thank you, Art.
And don't forget that autographed book.
You betcha.
Oh, we won't forget, Art.
All right. Your materials are on the way back. Take care.
You too.
That's it, folks. We're out of time.